trying to escape this futile. Who child is time to juggle it too wild? That's why we got more than two styles. To adapt in the situation, too shy. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Juggling specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burning same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennium. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there. You can go to abbitumi.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's abbitumi.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your devices. TuneIn is a free radio app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn radio app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BBTumi. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time, of various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:07 here in the city of Philadelphia on this snowy Sunday evening, and we're in the Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Tonight, a very interesting and timely program. And one of the guests has, two of the guests have been on prior programs with us to kind of talk about this important subject, building an economic base in our communities. And we'll hear from three activists that are doing things in their communities, respective communities. And we'll also hear from activists in 60th District, New York City Assemblyman, Brother Charles Barron will be joining us. The topic of the program this evening will center around an economic base in our communities with three activists that are doing big things in their respective areas. Brother Y. King Garrett, activist and organizer of the Africatown Project in Seattle, Washington. Brother Tommy Joshua, activist and organizer of the Peace Park, Philly, here in the city of Philadelphia, and also activist and organizer of Community Development Objectives, the Urban Equity Alliance. Brother Marcus Jackson is supposed to join us also. So we'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening at 7:13 here in the city of Philadelphia. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot. What's going on now?
How are you, sir?
Besides feeling a little, getting a little nervous about being snowbound, I'm doing fine. Matter of fact, I'm doing more than fine. I'm excited about this program. You know, Elliot, besides political formation, economic development formations, it's like, you know, my right and left lung. And being able to have, you know, these men on and being able to discuss what's going on in Philly or Philadelphia and other models that in New York and Seattle, it's like a kid in a candy store. So I'm excited.
Well, you know, when, because we've had these type of programs before, Richard, and when you're talking about economic development in our communities, it's a battle, because we know that this system, period, whether you're talking about Democrat or Republican, they don't want black folks to control the economy of their communities. And they don't want black folks to be organized. And in order to control the economy of your community, you have to be organized. And you have to have some type of political help to navigate some of these minefields. It just so happens that we have an activist organizer that happens to be a politician on with us this evening, Brother Charles Barron, is going to kind of give advice to some of our community builders about the pitfalls and things that they need to do to get around some of this stuff, because we don't have, and Richard, I mean, in the listening audience also, we don't have black politicians in the vein of Charles Barron, period.
No, we don't.
It's not even our argument. We don't have black politicians that think like him, that have a mission for his community like him, that are trying to develop or have developed his own district like him in New York or in other cities. We don't have politicians like that. So when we see a man that is doing work, that's why we wanted him to, on the program this evening, to hear some of the projects that these men are doing across the country and try to give them some advice in how they can navigate through this muck and mire sometimes that they might run into. Tonight, we've got a panel of community builders that are going to be on with us to talk about the projects that they're doing. Before we do that, and also Brother Charles Barron is with us. Before we do that, I want to do a brief synopsis and introduction of all of the men. First, Brother Wyken Garrett is a third-generation community builder, social entrepreneur, and community president and CEO of Africa Town Community Land Trust in Seattle, Washington. Wyken designs programs and initiatives to capitalize, mobilize, and activate communities for sustainable social impact. He has been a catalyst for numerous ventures, including Africa Town Seattle, Community Development Initiative, the Liberty Bank Building, Umoja Peace Center, the Black Dot, the Umoja Fest, the Africa Town Center for Educational Innovation, and the King County Equity Now. Wyken is an inaugural member of the Seattle Music Commission and a past fellow with the National Advocacy Organization Green for All. He's been recognized as Seattle's most influential people of 2019 and the Seattle Times' 13 most influential people of the decade from 2010 to 2019. Brother Wyken Garrett is with us. Brother Tommy Joshua is also with us. The Philly Peace Park, which is his project, is a new African land-based revolutionary movement for black unity, communally owned land, and local democracy, relying first and foremost on a strong spiritual foundation and appeal to our creator. The Philly Peace Park's development idea is to counter the predatory gentrification of black communities by raising up and defending multi-million-dollar black-designed, black-owned green neighborhood campuses with high-yielding farms and greenhouses, a K-20 education center focusing on science and technology, and opening up green space for African-American community library and black-owned retail malls. Such neighborhood campuses will serve as an engine for black self-determination and a vanguard for black liberation. And also a part of the panel is the Urban Equity Alliance, LLC, which is a grassroots organization focused on the revitalization of legacy communities, black communities, through development of real estate. Urban Equity Alliance was formed through a recognition of the decline of black communities and the subsequent devaluing of property, leading to the systematic gentrification. With our knowledge, relationship, and building and resources, we engage a multi-home capital building projects aimed at restoring the past splendor by building for the future. And that's Brother Marcus Jackson that heads that organization. So what we're going to do is introduce our guests, give them a brief synopsis of what's going on with their projects, and then we're going to start opening up for questions. And Brother Charles Barron is there to kind of advise our community home builders. First, let's go to Brother Y. King Garrett in Seattle. Brother Y. King, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm honored to be in the company of community builders. I definitely have a reverence for Honorable Charles Barron. I was living in New York at the time that he first ran and was elected, and came in contact through one of my esteemed mentors, Abubadika Sonny Carson, back in that time. So. Definitely we don't have politicians like that we need. And so I'm definitely interested to hear more and just hear more about what's going on with the brothers and sisters in Philadelphia, and to share anything that that might be helpful. Our focus is on developing models for thriving black communities, Africatown, inspired by Black Wall Streets, but embracing the black diaspora and the continent Africa as creating opportunity for us to be more economically sustainable in the global economy. So
thank you. Brother Rocking, I didn't know you were from New York. I thought you were from out there in Seattle.
No, okay. I'm from Seattle, but I had relocated after when I graduated. I went to school on that side and so on and so forth. So okay. I was there for a number of years.
All right. And you were on before with us to talk about that, but that was a couple of years ago, and I know some things has happened since then. A lot of things have happened since then, and we're going to mix it in with the conversation this evening. But let me go to Brother Tommy Joshua from Peace Park here in Philadelphia. Brother Tommy, are you there?
Yes, peace.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, Brother Elliot, man, and I'm feeling the same way Brother spoke before me, man. I'm so happy to be on this panel. I admire the work of all of the projects that you mentioned, man. So thank you for inviting me to talk, man. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you with us. And as the conversation moves forward, the listening audience will find out a lot more about the Peace Park. They'll find out a lot more about Africatown. I know Brother Richard always keeps me abreast of what's going on over there at Peace Park, because he's always in attendance there at a lot of the meetings and the functions going on. So,
yes, sir.
What we want to do is really get the community nationwide to hear what's going on at these different projects, and let the folks know that they can do what you men are doing in their particular areas. And let me say this before I go and introduce Brother Marcus and also Assemblyman Barron, is that what we need to realize is Seattle, and I just looked up their racial composition, and this was as of 2016, and keep in mind that gentrification is rampant in a lot of these cities across the country. It says the racial composition of the Seattle population in 2016 is 65.7% white, 14.1% Asian, and 7.1% 0% black. So you got a 7% population there that is doing things on the level that Brother Y. King and his organization is doing. But you got other cities with predominant black populations that are not doing this. Brothers and sisters, we got to get busy. We got to control the economy of these communities, or we're going to keep spinning our wheels. We're going to be on these Democrat and especially the Democrat. We're going to be on these Ferris wheels going around and around. And at every 2 to 4 years, when the wheel stops, you're right back in the same spot. We got to do better. We got to move forward. I don't know whether Marcus is here, Brother Richard. Can you see whether he's here?
The 7513.
Okay, let's introduce Brother Marcus. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, brother. How y'all doing?
Doing great. Give us a little synopsis, Brother Marcus, of the projects that the group is dealing with.
Yeah, well, first off, I just very excited to be a part of the discussion as well, and hopefully I can contribute something and hopefully gain something as well. I'm sure I will. But yeah, it's certainly about building our communities and about putting people together and trusting one another so that we can do so. Okay. We got to believe in ourselves, and we got to value where we live at. As you mentioned, gentrification happens because someone else comes in, sees value, and wants to force us out. So we got to put our minds together, put our energies together, and do for our community.
All right, brother. And let's go to, and last but not least, let's go to activist and organizer and 60th District of New York Assemblyman, Brother Charles Barron. The great things that you and your wife have done up there in the New York area speaks for itself. Assemblyman Barron, are you there?
Yes, I am. Could you hear me?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Well, first of all, I'm honored to be on with my brothers tonight. We have decided in Operation Power, which is our local black radical political organization, to see our community of New York as being a part of a political economy. There's a connection to politics and economics. And then the bottom line is you have to have some semblance of power. So we decided to use the strategy of the Democratic primary to wipe out the neo-colonial black puppets of the Democratic Party in our local communities so that we can have some control over the land use development process, so we can have control over the institutions and what comes in and out of our community. So we've been able to successfully wipe out the local Democratic Club in my beloved East New York 50th Assembly District. We got the district leaderships, both of them, black radicals. We got the council seat and the assembly seat, black radicals. We took over the leadership of the community board, black radicals, and we took over the county committees and some of the judicial delegates, and we even got a judge elected in our civil court district. By doing all of that, we were able to stop gentrification. My district is not gentrified. When I came in, it was 67% black. Now it's 76% black and 15-16% Latino. It was 8% white. Now it's down to 3.4% white. I didn't run them out. They left on their own. And so we were able to do that. And by doing that, now we are looking to develop. We did develop a local development corporation, East New York Local Development Corporation, East New York Restoration Local Development Corporation. And now we're moving to develop community land trust and worker cooperatives. But in the meantime, at least get black developers to have the general contract, not no subcontracting, but owning the land and doing the general contract. And we were successful in doing a little bit of that and much more.
Thank you, Assemblyman Barron. I want to start the conversation off with some of the organizers and give our audience a idea of what it took to do what some of you men have done on the level that you have done it, because it starts with an idea. Anybody that wants to do anything, it starts with an idea. But then you have to go out and you have to organize your community. That's key to do anything. Let's start with Brother Y. King. The Africatown community in Seattle is businesses. It's a bank involved. And first, talk a little bit about your ancestors, because you follow in the path of some of those men. And that spirit that was in them is in you. Talk a little bit about your ancestors and how you were able to accomplish what you did as far as organizing the community, Brother Joaquin.
Sure. So definitely I didn't invent anything, only picked up, you know, the baton that had been given by many of our ancestors, but specifically my own family. My father was really a front line for Black liberation in this area, and led a lot of institutional projects, including founding the African American Museum here in Seattle, taking over a school to establish that became known as the longest occupation of our act of civil disobedience in U.S. history, besides the land being occupied by colonial settlers. But and my grandfather was one of the co-founders of Liberty Bank, which was the second Black bank west of the Mississippi. So that's just some of the, you know, focus on establishing institutions to serve our community.
Okay.
Within our family line. But yeah, so that's just a little background.
Now, before I pass the baton to Brother Tommy, talk about the organization that was necessary to accomplish what you did to this point.
Okay, thank you, Brother Elliot. I would say, man, you know, and I'm thinking that all the brothers on this call can relate, it definitely take a lot of faith. It definitely take a lot of faith and a lot of hard work. And it really took a lot of careful observation also, and identifying potential allies and striving to put together a situation that is kind of quite delicate, by which we can maintain our motion while also being faced with various challenges, you know. Number one of those have been like the challenges of capital and then the challenges of the political situation. So I would just say, man, it really takes a lot of faith. It takes a lot of love for Black people to be able to work day in, day out for them in the face of what seems at times as a really hopeless situation. But it's that faith, and it's that love, it's that knowledge of our history, it's the knowledge of our, an appreciation of the character of our people, and it's the surety that a better future is possible if we struggle and fight for it. That has been like number one key for the peace part.
Brother Marcus, in your respect, the area that you come up in, which has been Black for generations, talk about the thrust that it took to kind of organize folks to kind of get on one page to put this together, what you're doing.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the question. It started off with there's certainly a love for our community, community that we grew up in. Myself and friends of ours just came together and just thought about where we grew up and what we would want to pass on to our next generation, and having that baton being passed on to us, and listening to the elders in the community, working with them. So it's all about that generational baton being passed on, for whether it be knowledge, capital to invest, but also just that energy and bringing everybody together. It takes me back to a sentiment I had in growing up. My grandmother would tell me, "Marcus, come over here at the sink and stand on the chair, help my mom, you know, shift these beans, wash up the vegetables," and told my brother to pick up the bag of tomatoes, take it down the street to Miss Hansley. "Miss Hansley is going to give you a bushel of cabbage, and my mom going to come back here and finish up this chicken, and we all eat supper together." So it was the notions of family, all being together, generations of family, but also you see in that the underlying rich messages, the families in the community working together, barter system, and just really relying on one another as a real community should, and taking those values, those experiences that I've had, and just translating them, and how can we continue to build upon what the generation before us did, and make this an even greater community, and sustain something for ourselves, so that we can control the economics, politics, and any things in our community.
Richard, jump in here, because I think that that some of the areas that the men are talking about is key, but some of the things that all three of the men spoke about was the financial part it took to kind of do some of the things that they're doing now. Jump in here, because I got some questions to kind of break that open a little bit, but I know you got some questions in the vein of what we're talking about now.
And I want to start with Baba Barron. You know, I know all three gentlemen are working within the community, and this is a different generation. So they're working in a community that they grew up in, if I'm not mistaken. So I guess I wanted to ask, how important do you see from, and I like what you start off with saying, from building a political economy, it is for the social capital, people who live in a community, to take charge of their community. How important is that in building a community from the vantage point that you have been working in these years?
Great question and critical question. The real challenge, my brothers, is that we have to be anti-capitalism, anti-imperialism. We live in a domestic colonial situation, colonial capitalism that creates these domestic colonies called Black communities. So we have to be careful not to offer Black capitalism as a solution and not just focus on inclusion, diversity as solutions, when we have to continually focus on the dismantling of the colonial capitalist system, its foreign policy of warmongering imperialism, and its ideology of racism. So having said all of that, our strategy is, in the meantime, we got to get power. Power is the great equalizer. And power is the ability to act. Power is the ability to fulfill your mission and purposes with the resources that are generated from your community. So that's why we say the political economy. So now we got to remember Ujamaa, cooperative economics, and look at how we can build these worker cooperatives. So what we've focused on in East New York is say, now how can we get some power? The city council has the power to determine what's going to be built on city-owned land. So until we can get the organizations and the corporations, community corporations in place to get the land, we have to be in a position to deny anybody else of getting it that has capitalistic exploitation and gentrification in mind. And that's how we stop gentrification, by getting the power in the city council, because every project that comes in on city-owned land is called the ULURP process, the Uniform Land Use Review process. All of the other structures, the borough president, the community board, and the community planning commission are advisory. We, the city council, has the last word and the power. So if Donald Trump wants to come into East New York and say, on this city-owned land, I want to build Trump Towers, he has to see the Black Panther council member, Charles Barron, or the Black Panther council member, Inez Barron, Panther in spirit. So we have power to say no to Trump even. anybody that comes in, which is how we were able to maintain or stop gentrification. We even stopped Walmart from coming in to our mall area. But we still haven't gotten enough black radical revolutionary organizations and corporations to get involved in building this economy so that we don't turn into, as we said in the Black Panther Party, we don't want to be black capitalists, but at the same time, we have to control the destiny of the black community. And living under capitalism, you may have to have a strategy, what we call the in the meantime strategy, pending revolution.
And if I can build on that with you three gentlemen in relationship to what I hear Barron saying about the city council controlling the land, you know, and in your areas, and for those that are in Philadelphia, you two gentlemen are in two different sections, you know, two total different sections of the city, and Brother Joaquin, you in Seattle. Can each of you give me your experience in relationship to the land space that you're in? What is the experience of that city council person that has that kind of power over that land? I think that would be helpful for us to reemphasize what Baba Barron is talking about. And can we start with you, Brother Joaquin?
Sure. One of the things I agree with everything that's been said. One of the things that we do is that we are very active in our local politics. We hold our own candidate forums to put the candidates on record and then, you know, hold them accountable to an agenda that we create. I did run for mayor in the city in 2009 to change the conversation, and that has been an effective strategy for us to start to run our own candidates, as Elder Barron has shared. And then in 2013, I think our district elected a open socialist candidate, Shama Sawant. And so that person has been challenging or supporting our community-led efforts to challenge predatory development in the community and lift up some of the things. But we've also, you know, held all the candidates to those issues. Seattle is a place where they use a lot of rhetoric around social justice, inclusion, and being liberal and progressive and things of that nature. But when you look at the numbers, basically the socioeconomic reality for black people is that of apartheid. And so that's one of the main things that we do, is be clear that what the numbers say is apartheid, or everything else is just, you know, good conversation and good marketing. Holding not only the politicians, but the people behind the politicians that are funding and putting these different politicians in office, really holding them accountable, because a lot of times the politicians are also just a buffer or representative of someone else's agenda. So for us is to focus on the capital class, or, you know, the economic power brokers or business establishment that is really setting the policy, and hold them accountable. So Seattle is going to be, you know, no different than Mississippi, then the world should know that, you know. And if it's going to be inclusive or have social justice or shared prosperity, then it has to turn the rhetoric into reality. And so that's been our focus, is making that, bringing that to bricks and mortar and beyond, you know, again, just good talking points, which has been, Seattle's good for let's not say we did.
I can see it. And Brother Tommy, who is in North Philadelphia, and Ellie, I just want to, you know, follow that around with each one of them.
Certainly.
And specifically looking at if you've had any experience, because I think it's an powerful point around the city council, this city council person controlling the land from a political perspective, but in wanting to develop as Baba Barron say, a political economy. What has been your experience with the council person in relationship to your community development or interaction at any degree? What has been your experience?
Okay. Thank you, Brother Rich, and I really appreciate what Brother Marcus said, and I love what with Baba Comrade Barron. And now, look, I was a young man, a young cadre of the Republic of New Africa in the 90s, man. And every time I would come to New York and I would attend December 12th movement meetings, man, you always blew my mind. You always lit a fire in me. And I said to myself when I was a young man, I said, that's what I want to be. I want to be that type of leader for my community, straight up. And what you was dropping, and like Brother Elliot said, we don't have too many like you. So I thank God for you, man, and thank you for inspiring us. So go back to your question. Philly is dominated by Black neocolonialism of the worst type. So the particularities of Philadelphia is a couple things that informed the Peace Park strategy. One of them was that Philly is about 58-60% African American, right? So that's one thing. And unfortunately, you know, you would think that our numbers would mean that we would have a vibrant political culture, but our numbers is a base for neocolonialism. You know what I'm saying? So that's a big problem. The second thing, Philly got an extreme vacant land situation. And we are also like one of the most poorest places in the country. The Black poverty is very concentrated. The Black oppression is very, very visceral. So in our situation, the battles that go on in the neighborhoods become particularly more acute. And there's also space, if you dare to struggle on a grassroots level, to make change in Philly. So our strategy has been to try to develop a grassroots community revolutionary base because of the situation. And we hope to advance from developing a grassroots independent land-based new African political power. We hope to be able to, in the future, fill candidates. But for now, neocolonialism has been the order of the day. And the representatives, our state representatives, our council president, Darrell Clark, all of them have been neutral to hostile to the movement of African Americans to situate themselves on land and to field independent development agencies. They have been no help at all. I have sat in the offices with these politicians. I went to them. They have straight told me, after hearing me out for 2-3 hours and after closing their door and giving, you know, acting like they care, they have straight told me there's nothing we can do for you. Oh, your wow. Project, you out there, you want some land, you raising Black love, you raising Black self-determination, you setting up independent programs, you fighting the largest landowner in the city, THJ, and you not doing this for Black capitalism, you not no puppet of no white people. So therefore, and you committed, and you don't want to be co-opted, and you don't want to be bought off, therefore, there's nothing that we can do for you. So I'm very, very interested in transforming this situation, because in Philadelphia, the politicians is damn near criminal. So they haven't been a help at all to our struggle in Philadelphia at all. Mm. And that's really been our experience. So our strategy has been informed. Because that's the situation, we have to build an independent land-based power in the community that stands on its own. And in 2014, we adopted a community constitution in our neighborhood. And this community constitution actually legalizes the reforms that the Philly Peace Park brought in, as far as the land ownership, as far as the programs, as far as democracy for New Africans, as far as our ultimate objective, which is to be part of a liberation struggle for national liberation. So that's been our experience, Brother Rich. It hasn't been, it's been tough, but we know we're going to win, though.
And with that said, Brother Marcus, I have the perception that your community and relationships have been used a different approach. I'm not sure about that, but the question is still the same, as because of the need of the political representation around the council controlling that land. Can you share with as you're developing your project, what experience you had in relationship to that?
Yeah, sure. So just as the brother just said, I mean, we understand the dynamics that are at play, you know, the reality that we live in. So our approach, and we're still maturing in that process to still seek greater political influence. We do have such with the ward leader that's with the community, very already on board with what we're doing. We also established a partnership relationship agreements with the community residents there who are looking to invest along with us. But what we wanted to do is we created an LLC to purchase the empty lots that are in the land. We're up in Northeast Philadelphia. And just to kind of emphasize the additional dynamics, you know, Northeast is where a lot of the Black people that have been gentrified, have been displaced, have been moving to. And what we see it as, you know, it's kind of the forgotten about, really. I mean, that's the general concept of it. Just put the Negroes here and let them fend for themselves. And I think by taking a grassroots approach and really talking with your community and building with it, we can overcome this struggle. But it's going to take you know, that real partnership and us putting our funds together, little or small, or big, you know, big amounts of dollars, but putting it together and buying up the land and really doing it for the community, so we can all build and we can all have something together.
Great. So that will be my first value, Elliot. You can build on that with us, if you don't mind.
Let me go back around again, because I know that Brother Y King and Brother Tommy got something in common, and I read it in published reports. The Tommy situation I was familiar with. Brother Y King, I read it in published reports. We see that when these men are trying to build community, that they're running afoul of these city governments, whether it's Black faces in it or not. So it's necessary for the men to be prepared to institute direct action. Now, I see that Brother Y. King had to do it when they took over vacant firehouse because of projects they wanted to do, and Tommy's properties that they had taken over had been raided. Brother Y. King, let me start with you. Talk about the direct action that was taken. I think it was back in June during the summer. That's when I read it in a published report. But you can kind of give us the little backstory on what the community had to do in order to acquire some of these properties.
Yes. So the fire station project is something that the community have been advocating for really for the last 8 years. And what actually happened is that when the George Floyd, the uprisings in response to George Floyd murder and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery and many others emerged, our focus was to direct that energy towards land, on acquiring land, not to just to be, you know, marching in the streets and begging for, mercy in a sense, but to direct that energy to something more tangible. We, you know, probably put 100,000 people in the streets over the course from June through August, and you know, a coalition was born out of that, King County Equity Now, focusing on equity being ownership, you know, and creating a new normal rooted in equity, meaning ownership, and moving away from the current apartheid socioeconomic. And so one of the in that process, so it was two main things: is land, access to capital to develop the land that we control, and then control over the resources that are supposed to impact our lives, because we know that billions of dollars go to many different, you know, nonprofit agencies and sometimes through city government or other government channels that's supposed to impact our lives, but it's not controlled by our community. And over the course of what has emerged as the nonprofit industrial complex, basically Black suffering and marginalization is just being used as an exploitable resource, in the same way that Black labor is still being used as an exploited resource in the prison industrial complex. So we wanted to challenge and disrupt that. And one of the things that the mayor responded with was finally moving to transfer this former fire station to be repurposed as an innovation hub, which would be the epicenter of our Black tech the innovation and business development ecosystem. And so that's how that went. So this is something that had been, you know, worked on for years. But at the time, you know, in the midst of this, our focus was on acquiring land and access to capital. So that still remains the focuses. And so we were able to have some progress through that process.
Brother Watkins, so I'm going to try to make it clear, because you made it clear, but I want to kind of reiterate what you're saying. When the community took the direct action of going to these places, this was a particular strategy that y'all had been working on for a while. So when the city of Seattle acquiesced to the community, it was because of the pressure that you men and women put on them.
That's correct. And there was another project, a full square block that a predatory developer had actually got under contract, which was mobilized to stop. And now we're in the process of acquiring that square block not far from the fire station. So, yeah, we've been very specific in terms of how we strategically, you know, use our time, energy and resources to affect changes that will be tangible and long lasting.
Now, Brother Tommy, what this city did against you was a little bit different. They raided the properties that Peace Park had. Now, because I want you to kind of go into this a little bit. You had met prior with city officials.
Yes.
So these city officials knew what Peace Park was about. They could come and see. They could come and see what Peace Park was doing.
Right.
But they decided as a city initiative to raid the properties. And plus, before you do that, the group went in and took over these properties because they were crack houses. You cleaned the places out, rehabbed them, and turned them into functional community organizations and distributing food, distributing services to the community. So it was well known what Peace Park was doing. So the city decided to raid the properties with PHA and the police there, like you were doing. Tell the listening audience what happened in regards to the situation.
Yeah, Brother Elliot, you summed it up really, really great. The Peace Park go back to 2012. You know what I'm saying? It go back to 2012. And we grow out of the New African Independence Movement. We grow out of the Black Panther Party, you know what I'm saying? You know, I consider myself a Black Panther, you know? And so we were already from the gate, we understood what we were dealing with. And back in 2012, we originally entered the land. You know, we had almost a whole block that we were developing. And we were doing it autonomously. And we were doing it because we operate under emergency conception. Like, we under an emergency. Our people are starving. Our people are dying. Our children are being miseducated daily. So we feel like we have to move strong, and we have to put that pressure to the wound to stop the bleeding. So that's the urgency that the Peace Park advocates to get to the land. And our first original Peace Park, it was a showdown with the city. It was a big thing. And they actually fenced us off, and they threatened us. The politicians that I spoke of said that they was going to lock everybody up for criminal trespass. It got real nasty, but they couldn't drive our people from the land. They couldn't stop the reforms, the popular reforms that we introduced, the institutions. They could not put that genie back in the bottle. And what happened with that first struggle was that it ended in something called a land swap, which was unprecedented, where the system went from denying us and calling us criminals and calling us squatters and saying that we was blocking development. They had to swap the land that we received, that we held, for other land up the street. And by doing that, that was important because that was us defending the new revolutionary political power, the new Black power that was in the neighborhood. And when we got to the new land in 2016, they continued to harass us. And what we had to do is we had to out-organize the government. We had to isolate the government. We had to organize everybody else but the government. And we had to press forward using our self-determination as a battering ram. Right? So our self-determination. So as soon as we hit the land, we immediately rebuilt the farm. We immediately start rebuilding our schoolhouse because education is important. We immediately brought in the black markets. And by doing this, it created a situation where either the system would have to all out assault us, which wasn't possible, or they would have to buckle. But what happened is similar to Brother Joaquin and Brother, I salute you so much for your work, family. We also struck when the iron was hot. When COVID hit, the Peace Park in our neighborhood, we found ourselves as the only organization that was still on the streets other than the cops, right? So it was just us and the cops. So in that situation, we understood that that opportunity opened up, but also things were more visible. Both of the houses that's next to the Peace Park is on half the block, and the other half the block is buildings. All of a sudden, once the Peace Park got established at this location, we noticed that squatters appeared. And we didn't have no problem with that first. We thought that it was people from the neighborhood who were coming back to them houses. But actually, they were prostitution houses. So these prostitution houses cropped up right around the Peace Park. Now, at the time, we were talking to PHA, which is the housing authority, because we were trying to build the schoolhouse. So we were in negotiations with them around that. And we let them know, we said, look, your properties that's on this block that you claim that you own has illicit activities. Now, we are willing to go in there and shut them down if you don't. So then when the COVID hit, the Archdiocese of Philadelphia reached out to the Peace Park and said, hey, y'all the only ones that's on the streets that's not scared. Can we partner with y'all and y'all food programs? So we reached out to PHA. We copied the Archdiocese on the thing to the city and said, look, the Archdiocese want to work with us for food distribution. Let us go into these crack houses that y'all managing and put the big refrigerators in and use them as food distribution centers. They ignored us. So what the Peace Park did is we organized our neighbors and we went into the houses. We went into the houses, we cleared them out, we stabilized them, we brought out dumpsters, we cleaned them up, we redid the sheetrock, we redid the plumbing. This is how great our faith is and our risk model, because the Peace Park model is a risk model. It is. We admit it is a risk model. And then what we start doing is we start having food distributions in front of the houses. People from the neighborhood start coming to us and thanking us, saying, hey, we're so happy that y'all took over those houses. I haven't seen my uncle in 2 years. I'm so glad that y'all locked up the doors and put new locks on. I haven't seen my nieces in years. So it was a popular thing in the neighborhood. We let PHA know. We let them know. We said, hey, we went into the properties. We stabilized them. Now, also another thing that was taking place is that oftentimes, like in my neighborhood is the neighborhood that Malcolm X lived in, the Fruit House, is a neighborhood of Cecil B. Moore. It's a neighborhood of the rebellion that took place back in 64. It's a neighborhood where the Panther Party's headquarters was located at. It's the area where NAACP. So I live in a neighborhood that got a long history of revolutionary struggle. And what happened was once we got the houses activated, once we start moving, white activists came into the neighborhood and they organized a homeless camp. But it was led by white activists. And the white activists took the homeless folks and was using the homeless folks to press a reformist demand, not for African-American democracy or for community control, but under this banner of affordable housing. So what happened was the raid took place at the same time that the city was negotiating with the white activists. So when they raided us in an early morning raid, we got phone calls from people in the community. I immediately left my home. I live around the corner. We pulled up. The cops was tearing the place up. And it was an attempt to criminalize the black revolutionaries.
Now, wait a minute. Brother Tommy, yeah. Hold on. Yeah, hold your point. I want you to finish up. But when you got there and the cops was basically ransacking the place, why were they ransacking the place when they knew what was going on was community-based and there wasn't nobody holding any type of subversive meetings, what they would term subversive meetings, weapons being had? What was the purpose of ransacking the buildings?
Well, they wanted to destroy the progress we were making.
Okay, okay.
You know, we had a lot of, we were using one building for supplies. and they knew that we were gaining in our community support. I mean, it's during COVID, we had a neighborhood marketplace where we brought together over 24 black businesses consistently every third Saturday for a black market. We were giving out and feeding 200 people a week. We were doing some amazing things serving our people during COVID, and they wanted to criminalize that.
Okay.
They wanted to make it seem like the black revolutionaries was the troublemakers in the neighborhood. And what happened, though, brother, is that we went into the raid. We walked into the raid. We hopped out the car. It was about two or three of us, and we went into the raid. And by walking into the raid, we took the ancestors with us, because I just want to raise up how we are spirit filled. First and foremost, we are spirit filled. We are fearless, and we feel very much that God backs us, and also the ancestors back us, and we know that we will win. So when we walk into the raid, it threw the cops off, because we came into the house demanding that they leave. And we came in asserting our community ownership rights. And immediately I noticed the cops started switching up. And then I noticed that the PHA people start getting on phone. And then what happened was people started coming out of their houses, and it looked like it was a black on black thing, because they had black workers backed by the police boarding up our properties. And the only thing we can tell them was, look, once y'all leave, we taking these properties back over. But one thing led to another. And the raid collapsed, Brother Elliot. They got back in their cars. They pulled off. Our windows was bust. Our locks was bust. They ransacked things. We looked to see if they stole anything. And about an hour later, here comes PHA bigwigs pulling up to the house, apologizing to us, saying that it was a mistake, saying that somebody didn't get the memo. And by the end of that night, PHA lawyers sent us a lease agreement for both of the properties in less than 6 hours after the raid. And that's kind of how that happened. And us defeating that raid, us defending what we have done and accepting the consequences of it and standing on it, was a tremendous boost for the Philly Peace Park. And it also let the system know that if they seek to reverse the gains that black people are taking, it's going to cost them.
Assemblyman Byrne, you heard the two men talk about the direct action that they had to take. Now, in your district, the 60th district, there's no need for blacks that want to kind of start taking control of the economy to do direct action, because they have the political backing of yourself and the community on one page. But other areas of New York City and other cities, where our people don't have the political backing, they definitely don't have those municipal government backings, but they have the neighborhood backing. Is it necessary for direct action to be taken as a strategy, in your opinion?
Well, absolutely. Even in my district, we need direct action.
Okay.
The only thing we've been able to do is stop gentrification. The city still chooses the developers. We then say, we don't care who you're choosing, they're not gentrifying our neighborhood. So the people that have property in our neighborhood that we work with, there are three very powerful forces in the black community, very influential forces. One is the politician, two is the preacher, the church, and three is the union leader. So in our district, most of the property and everything is still owned by white developers. We were able to get black developers, like this church bought some property and they wanted to build a new church and some housing. And a black developer, said, I'll definitely work with you on that. So she went to HPD, Housing Preservation Development, similar to your PHA, and said, we have the property and we want to build this. They said, you don't have the capacity, that you have to get a partner, meaning a white guy. And so she went and she had to get the white guy. Where we were helpful is that when he came on the scene, he said that I'm going to be the general contractor. I'm going to own over 50% of the property. And you, the black woman who started it with the black church who owned the property, would only get 17%. We said, you must be out of your mind. First of all, you're not owning 50%. 30% is going to this sister. And there was an Indian woman who was the architect, 30% to her, 30% to you, and 10% to the church, whether you like it or not. And she's going to be ownership of some of the property with everybody else because the church owns the property. So you're not coming like that. So we were able to do that and then make sure all of the 300-400 units of housing was affordable to the area median income of the neighborhood. The AMI is how they gentrify. So if you're in a neighborhood like mine, poor neighborhood, crime, all of that stuff, we have an AMI, an area median income, of $36,000 for a family of three. So if you come in to build housing and you say the required income is for those making $100,000, $80,000, $70,000, $60,000, that's gentrification. Because white folk are going to come in because my area median income is $36,000. So we made them meet the income band of our neighborhood. We have over 12,000 units of housing. Not one market rate housing development is in my district. Not one. And all of those, they have to meet the area median income of my beloved East New York. We have yet to get on the level that you brothers are on, where you actually owning stuff. We got maybe 3 or 4 places where we actually got black developers to own, because that's still in the control of the city who picks the developers. But we say that the project has to be affordable. So yes, we still have to get into that direct action. And right now we have 2 pieces in place, Man Up Inc., which we see to it that they get some funding from the city to exist for them brothers and sisters coming out of incarceration. We were able to get a developer before we signed off on his affordable housing plan that was affordable to our community. We made him commit to a $12 million 2-story state-of-the-art youth center that Man Up people in our community were going to be hired and controlled. And then after 25, 30 years of the loan, they're going to own it, an entire youth center. So right now, that's how we manipulate the system with the power we have. But no, we still need to do that direct action. We still don't own the property in our neighborhood. We were just able to get black developers from Harlem and black developers from Brooklyn to now break through and get that subsidy. So, you know, the city gives these rich white boys subsidies. Free money. We have capital challenges, and they say, hey, you know, I used to tell this one developer, he came in and said, Mr. Barron, if I keep the rent that low, because, I mean, in New York, a studio apartment will cost you $2,500, $3,000 a month. We make them only do $500, $750 for a studio, $900 for a one-bedroom, $1,100 for a two-bedroom, and $1,200 for a three-bedroom. Unheard of in New York. But you can get that in East New York. So we have to deal on that level until we can get to the point where we actually own. And that's why I'm inspired by what you brothers are doing. So I didn't come here just to teach you some stuff and show you some stuff. I'm learning from you because we got to get to that stage. We've just been very successful in dealing with the politics of the community so we can stop gentrification, stop Walmart, and stop some other things from happening. But we even had Amazon came in because on private property, we have no say-so over it. If it's city-owned land, we have some say-so. So we got a ways to go. I'm learning from y'all tonight, too. Keep up the good work.
Hey, Brother Elliot, if I jump in.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Brother Marcus, so, you know, it just takes me back to something I learned from my mentor, Brother James Kleeman. Wrote a paper on what is more important, to have black capital or black consciousness. And as you read the paper, you realize, you know, it's to develop our consciousness first. So it's about establishing the mindsets and as you always say, changing the paradigms and awakening to what our needs are for the community, regardless if we have money or not, big money or not, we can pool our monies together in a more economic efforts. But it's about really that consciousness and making a commitment to being a one community and growing from that and really building together. So with our project, yeah, we are owning the lands, but still learning from, you know, what these other brothers are doing and Charles Barron about the political influence. But yeah, owning the properties and just putting our monies together to really build. Gotta have that consciousness. You gotta make a commitment to be about Black first. That's controlling right. The economics in our community and influencing the politics so we can continue to grow and not have these outsiders that come in here. You know, the devil comes to lie, steal, and destroy. Yes. And the right. stories that I heard about the brother being raided, you know, is what a devil would do. And we have to work together to overcome these struggles, just as our ancestors and our forefathers, foremothers have been doing for generations before us. You know, our right. ancestors are absolutely backing us. They are the undergirding of the projects that we have, the dreams that we envision, and the reality that we will put in place. We got to speak it into existence, and we got to make sure that we are absolutely about community and not just about this capitalism and trying to make a quick dollar. It's about what we are going to leave to the next generation.
That's you right.
We've seen all these police shootings and troubles that go on all across America. You know, these things are happening to Black people, whether they live in a gated community or whether they live in a quote-unquote hood or not. But as we continue to build, we got to continue to change. And this system is always going to be against us. They're going to find a new way.
Yes.
We got to be ready. But our unity is the key factor in overcoming all of this.
I'm glad that you, Brother Marcus, contextualized the consciousness part of it. And Brother Baba Barron, you know, recognizing the ownership. And I'm look what I see is different strategies. So, and I'm trying to make sure I get go to a question, right? So Marcus, you're raising that your all approach are to go about you know, to deal with the purchasing of the lots and building the political relationship. Brother Joaquin and Brother Tommy had the relationship and are using direct action to acquire the land from Baba Barron. You emphasize the point of, though having the political machinery, you still need to be able to purchase or have purchase ownership of the land.
Correct.
I'm asking a question. What are we hearing as the listening audience? Would you say that we need all of the, at some point, all of these have to be integrated in order to work?
Amen.
To be made. Right.
You must have been reading my mind, because that's exactly right. You need what we're doing. Get them political seats of power. We that's need right. what you're doing. Direct action. Take the damn land, whether they like it or not. And when we combine stuff like that, because like we also work closely with the African People's Socialist Party, Brother Amale Yesitela, and what they're doing in Lewis and in Oakland and in parts of Philadelphia and also in St. Petersburg, Florida. They have learned the process, or we've been a part of the electoral radical revolutionary politics school. And so they've learned how to purchase land in other places and know the process. So when they went to the Ferguson uprising, rebellion, and they hooked up with some people there, they joined with them. And now they went to the city council and they got property that was nobody wanted for $10,000, $50,000, $20,000, $100,000. And then they rehabbed all of that stuff. now they got, you know, markets, and they got a sports complex and, you know, different kinds of things. Uhuru House, where they have their Black Power, Marcus Garvey-type economic projects with culinary arts and, you know, pies and stuff and baking and selling food. So they did all of that, and we teamed up with them. And here we teamed up with Operation Power and Man Up Inc. and East New York Local Development Corporation. So even when you get in a seat of power, you better have the not-for-profits that can take advantage of you being in that seat. Because a lot of people come up to us, oh, Brother Barron, you know, you're in office, man. Could you get me this land? Could you get me a job? Don't have a resume. Don't have no organization. No, I can't. You know, and I don't want to have – we get $5 million a year to give out to capital projects in my district. $5 million. We get $400,000 to $500,000 a year to give out to programs in the district. And we get $400,000 to hire staff. Revolutionaries need that.
That's right.
They need that. So then we do that, and we got our brothers in here saying we got an organization that's legaled up and we're going to take some property. You can work with that because you'll have power. It's about power, power. You can't ignore state, municipal, federal. You can't ignore the power structure of capitalism, no matter how much you are against it. We got to get power. It feels so good. We stop things from happening without a single demonstration. We said no. The mayor came into my office with my wife and said, we want to build a homeless shelter on this land that already existed. They wanted to take it down and build 300 units of housing. And instead of the homeless shelter being four square blocks and 200 people with a courtyard in the middle, they wanted to build it 10 stories high, and then the rest would be affordable housing. We said, and Inez said, no. The mayor came into my office to meet with Inez. He wanted to meet with Inez, my wife, at City Hall. This is the powerful mayor of the powerfulest city in the world. She said, I want my husband involved. He said, okay, I'll come to East New York. Mayor doesn't come to no local community. He didn't have the power to give them that. So he came to the office. Inez said, no, no shelter. The mayor left and said, well, if you're not going to do the shelter, first he said, what do you want? What do you want? What can I give you for your community for you to support this project? We said, we're not for sale. We're not for sale. Whatever you can do for our community, you need to do that anyway. He left that Friday mad, and he said, well, it'll just be like it is. You'll just have that four-block shelter that's raggedy and nothing to happen. We said, so be it. But we have a plan. You make that 500 units of housing affordable to our definition of affordability. Put those 200 families in a permanent apartment with subsidies, and we could talk. He said no. He left Friday, Monday. The land use division called us up because the developer whose leader was the governor's sister said, we'll do the 500 housing. You know why? Because we called up the subcommittee that's going to vote on the project, seven people. And they said, whatever you want, Inez, we will do. That's power. And when they said no to the mayor, he twisted arms. They still said no. We got 500 units of housing now, and 200 families are out of a homeless shelter and in permanent housing. That's power.
Powerful. And I want to follow up. You know, we've been talking about, based off of the energy and the discussion that we're having here right now, and I hope the Time for Awakening audience see and will continue to look in their areas for men like yourself and organizations like yourself in order to provide them support. So I wanted to say, Marcus, Brother Joaquin, and Brother Tommy, because we've been talking about conventions and we're having this discussion here, the question I have for you, and starting with you, Brother Marcus, have you been this? It seems that, you know, here we are dealing with across states, in looking at local area and local developments. Are you, is there a venue that you have had or that you've seen to where this discussion about how, as Baba Barron said, the acquisition of power and the development is going on that you've been able to attend to support? And I'm asking all three of you the same question because I'm wondering, do we have that kind of communication about development that we can learn from each other? So, Brother Marcus, have you been involved with this kind of discussion in that manner, where looking at other places?
Yeah, I would say, first off, right here, we're within our community. You know, we have discussions in this, and about that relationship building. So we're talking to all the residents in the neighborhood, and again, getting that buy-in and allowing the community to decide on, you know, what we want to build. You know, we want to see more Black home ownership in our community. So it's establishing that. So the conversations are happening. Definitely, certainly at a grassroots level and just directly with the people in the community.
And Brother Joaquin, building on what Brother Marcus said as far as the community, and I take it that you had the same you are having in order to mobilize and organize as it relates to, so I'm going to use across states, the, you know, interaction of community developers at the grassroots level. Have you been engaged in or see that kind of venue exists?
In different pieces. That's a good question. So we're a land trust. So Africatown is a asset-based comprehensive community development initiative that's for the comprehensive development of our community, from education, economics, health and wellness, et cetera, et cetera. The land trust we saw as a key component to control the land, because whoever controls the land or owns the land controls what happens on the land and in the space. So that is why that has been a major focus for us. As being a land trust, we did connect with the Grounded Solutions, which is a national land trust network. Most of those are not led by, you know, Black communities, but there are more Black communities coming into that, even to speak. I know there's a coalition of New York City like land trust and to Elder Barron's district. I know there's an East New York land trust. We had some conversations with them. So that's one of the things, is just getting our community to really take control of what's happening in the communities in these different economic development, community development corporations. I would just raise up that, you know, Restoration Plaza, Restoration Community Development Corporation, which Abubadika Sonny Carson, one of our great ancestors, was fundamental in founding, was the first community development corporation in America. NeighborWorks is another significant program which was established by a Black woman. Her name escapes me, from Pittsburgh. I found out when I actually attended this Grounded Solutions conference that was in Pittsburgh. I think last year in Newark, Ras Baraka held a anti-gentrification conference. I just caught the tail end of it. I think it was on C-SPAN, and I think they may be doing another thing. And the Institute for Black World Development, I think that's the name of it, Dr. Ron Daniels, they were a part of that. And I know they're facilitating some things as well. But as of recently, this new app, Clubhouse, has been a place where we've been able to connect with a lot of people doing similar work or have aspirations for similar work around the country. So that is where we've been finding people. And I know I plan to be out this year, you know, on a Build Africa Town tour to connect with people doing similar work in different cities as well. So that's what I have to offer to that question.
And it's interesting as I come to you, Brother Tommy, around this, and Elliot, I just want to end with Brother Baba Barron on the land trust. But because for us, you know, Elliot and myself, it was Brother Tommy was raising the question in relationship to Peace Park of having this kind of discussion. And so he was kind of instrumental in us kind of looking at and bringing, you know, you gentlemen together in order for us to share. Now, I think we've even expanded, you know, as it goes on. So, Brother Tommy, is it from, are you, as Peace Park is developing, you been able to find others who are using strategies or tactics and developing by direct action or other means that you've acquired your space to be able to kind of share share ideals? Have you, I'm trying to get a sense from all of us, you know, to the degree that we're exposed to each other and how frequently we need to be exposed to each other to kind of create synergy across our different spaces. Have you been exposed to people who are talking about this outside of the community that you're working in and working for?
Oh, well, thank you for the excellent question, brother. I think that this needs to happen much more. We need an alliance. We need a real alliance. We need a real united front that's concrete, that's consistent, of material support to each other, of visiting each other and strengthening each other any way we can, because there's one movement for the freedom of the Black nation, for independence for our people, for the elimination of the exploitative systems, imperialism and capitalism and white supremacy. That's what we want. And I'm really appreciative of this conversation. And I do think that in our experience, man, you know, the conversations in certain Black circles for us has been scared Negroes or Black capitalists or folks who wanted to just be under white people or folks who didn't want to fight for the long-term struggle and didn't want to really take the risk. So it was a lot of fear. Then what we had to do too sometime, and I know other comrades may be able to relate to this, we had to also kind of do business with white folks, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes the only place that is talking about land trust may be the white folks. The only place that is talking about micro industries is the universities. But when we go up into those spaces, of course, we really can't get a fair hearing. But we do appreciate perhaps the information that may come for that. But also, too, a lot of the Black revolutionaries is dropping the ball. So in Philadelphia, we've been really wanting to have a strong alliance with the revolutionary nationalist community. That's what we want. That's who the Peace Park want to build with. Mm-hmm. Because the Peace Park movement is part and parcel in a continuation of the Black liberation struggle. We see ourselves in the North. We see ourselves as a colony. We are Pan-Africanists on a global level. And inside the United States, we are new African nationalists. We want independence for a Black nation. We believe anywhere where our people is at. But the Black liberation movement itself has been in an ideological and organizational crisis, where folks want to focus on identity. They want to focus on other issues that's foreign from our people. They want to bring in foreign culture, harmful, reactionary European ideology, and they don't want to fight for power in the community. So I believe that discussions like this one has been vital. This is important, and we need the Black radicals and the Black nationalists to unite with each other, to develop a program for action, and let's get to work with a combined strategy of building power. I'm all for that, brother, and it need to happen. It don't happen enough, and I'm happy to be part of this conversation with these esteemed comrades.
And I wanted to end with you, Baba Baron, on this question, because I heard it come up, this I'm going to call it this instrument called a land trust. I heard Brother Joaquin bring it up, and right now, Brother Tommy brought up, and you have brought it up earlier. Can you describe what is a land trust and how important is it in relationship to community development, community building?
Well, first of all, let me say in this new year, this is by far the best conversation I've had this year on addressing the economic issue. This should have been a national podcast because of the different elements that were presented here tonight. This was awesome. And I say coupling this kind of conversation with a Black radical electoral politics revolutionary movement, getting these local seats of power with revolutionaries, any movement without a vision and ideology is like flying a plane without radar. You're not going to know where you're landing. So this tonight was awesome. The community land trust concept, matter of fact, brother said he met with some of the community land trust of East New York in my district. That was started by a white not-for-profit, Cypress Hills Development Corporation. And we're developing under the East New York Restoration LLC. Nez, the council member, we see some property there. We're going to develop a community land trust to take that property. And the beautiful thing about the community land trust, just like they give these white boy developers land for a dollar, dirt cheap, why can't you give it to the community so the community will own, the land trust will own it, and they can decide what's going to be built on it. You know, it could be restaurants, it could be supermarkets, it could be housing, but it will be in the control of the community. So I think when we look at economic development, we got to look at community land trust, and we got to look at worker cooperatives. So when we build an industry, we build worker cooperatives. So that's what we need to look at and combine that stuff. So was this recorded?
Yes, sir.
Can it be shared?
Oh, yeah.
Because this needs to be really shared. I mean, these brothers that you have on, they're doing the work. They have concrete stuff. And when my brother said the revolutionary groups, you know, need to be a little more organized and involved, that's why I got to give the December 12th movement a lot of credit, because they got down with us and we are offering. You don't have to. People think you don't say you're revolutionary. Don't say socialism. Don't say communalism, communism,
right.
just you know, like, just go along to get along. Then when you get in, say that. I said, no. I said I'm a revolutionary from the beginning. I don't wear shirts and ties. I ain't saluting the flag. I ain't doing That's the right. Pledge of Allegiance. I said it. I'm a Black Panther. I'm not going to say that after I get in. And I say the stuff that I just said to y'all. I say it on the floor of the State Assembly and on the floor of the City Council. I don't just say it around people that'll give me an amen. So we have to be, you have to say it. Mao Tse-tung says, you got to say who you are. If you are a radical, a revolutionary, you got to say it while we're doing these other things. Because if I just get people jobs, if I just stop landlords from throwing people out, which we've done, Mel Faulkner, who may he rest in peace, just made his transition, helped over 200 families. They stopped the foreclosures for them. If we do all of that, there's some of these sellout Negro politicians that could do that. But when you do that with a revolutionary ideology, you know, our people are at a very survival level. You know, Milk Talker Brown said it best. Bear in mind, the masses are not fighting for ideas in your head. They're fighting for material benefits and a future for their children. Tell no lies, claim no easy victory. What he's saying is that we got to do the revolutionary ideology, but you have to meet the material needs of the people, and you can't meet it just demonstrating. You can't
right.
meet it just having people's tribunals and finding them guilty and not arresting nobody. You can't meet it just with rhetoric. You have to meet it. Now that I got 2,000 jobs for my people, 12,000 yes. units of affordable housing, 3 new $100 million schools, we was able to get 5 parks renovated for over $50 million, $40 million worth of scholarships, a Black Male Initiative in CUNY, City University of New York. I can talk revolution to them now. Because they can't say to me, yeah, you talk all that stuff, but I need a job. Got you one. Now let's talk revolution.
That's right.
Jay Elliott.
Right on, brother. Right on.
Yeah, brother, can I jump in real quick?
Go ahead, Brother Rocky.
Yeah, I just want to lift up again, just going back to the point of why I lifted up, Restoration Plaza and the CDC and the NeighborWorks. I found the sister's name. It was Dorothy Mae Richardson. And NeighborWorks is a national organization that provides a lot of technical assistance around community development things. But there was a black woman in Pittsburgh that started that, you know, the Community Development Corporation start, you know, that started in right there in Brooklyn. Right. Right. Even land trust, the New Communities Land Trust was started, you know, in Georgia to help black farmers. It was really a operations initiative to help black farmers who were dispossessed of land get ownership to land, you know, in the late 1960s. A lot of these tools get taken over. You know, some of them become federal policy, like NeighborWorks is a federally funded initiative now. But the control and the resources are not in control of the same communities that produce these. No difference than us producing hip hop and so many other things, so much culture that other people actually become monetized and, you know, benefit from more than the communities that started it and that it was meant for. So some of these things we just have to reclaim. And that's why I say we come from an asset base, meaning we have solutions. We've created solutions. We are the wealth, right, of the nation. And so we always want to come from that perspective rather than the deficit-based perspective that that drives a lot of the narratives around our communities and our people globally, right? And so that's important, too, because it is a mindset. The first thing that we had to do is address, you know, the mindset of our people. When we said Africatown, you know, there's a lot of negative reaction outside our community, even negative reaction in our community, right? So it is a mindset thing first. That's the first place we got to build the Black Wall Street or build Africatown or build whatever is in the minds of our people. And a lot of times what's important is to show them real examples that someone just like them have made a significant impact in their community that then end up being an impact, you know, to the nation or to the world.
And I just want to recommend two books. By the way, brother, you're right with Africatown, because Black Wall Street, before it was named that, it was called Little Africa. And then when some of the more middle-class blacks got in control and was following some other kinds of concept, they called it Black Wall Street. But prior to that, it was called Little Africa. But I want to encourage us to, if y'all probably know these books already, but this one is excellent, Collective Courage, A History of African-American Cooperative Economic Thought and Practice by Jessica Gordon Nempard, Collective Courage. She has everything in there on cooperatives, on land trust, a whole history of it, Collective Courage. And I think most of you know that in that phenomenal book, Blueprint for Black Power, A Moral, Political, and Economic Imperative for the 21st Century by Amos Wilson. Those two books is what we use to try to make sure that we get into the political economy. We got to get the local political seats of power, and we got to develop these community land trusts and these worker cooperatives and land banks and skills banks, all of this stuff in the meantime, pending revolution.
Brother Byron, that author, what was her name again, Jessica, what was that?
Name.
I'll spell it for you. Her name is Jessica, J-E-S-S-I-C-A, Gordon, G-O-R-D-O-N.
Okay.
And it's Nembhard, N-E-M-B, as in brave, hard, H-A-R-D, Nembhard.
Okay.
Jessica Gordon Nembhard, Collective Courage.
All right. Listen, Brother Tommy, I know that you have to go because you got a meeting shortly.
Yes.
But before you leave, Brother Tommy, I want you to hear something again. Brother Y. King, you mentioned earlier in the conversation that you ran for mayor in Seattle in 2009. But I know, based on the demographics of that city, 65% white, 7% black, that you ran as a strategy. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's correct.
Now, the reason I'm saying this is because myself and Brother Richard had a black political forum here in Philadelphia about a year ago, Richard, right?
Yeah.
And we introduced to the community at the time that wasn't aware of Khalid Raheem of the New African Independence Party. He came out of the school of Omalia Shetelli, and he started an independent black party here in Pennsylvania that's registered and everything else, and came to the city, we introduced him, where we can start developing candidates in our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And it really didn't take off. But I think now, Tommy, and you probably saw it then, but
right.
You see now that it's necessary,
yes,
to develop people with a community-centered heart, a revolutionary heart, a Pan-African heart in these communities. We can do it. Brother Y. Yes. King said that he developed a community constitution. I think you said the same thing, Tommy. Those things can be presented to the candidates that we formulate, that we run, that is committed to the community. That way you don't have to go into their office and sit there, and after you spill, tell them everything you want to do, they say, well, you got to force me to do this and things like you wouldn't get those responses. You know, you're really sick of hearing those responses from people that turn their back on the community if they was ever for the community anyway. But I just kind of reiterated that we need African-centered independent parties in these cities so we can take control of the economies of these areas.
Yes.
Yeah, I would just add that to your point. Yeah, in our last iteration, again, with the King County Equity Now Coalition, one of the things is establishing a PAC, right, to deal with, you know, developing and running the candidates and pushing our platform to other candidates to move forward our economic agenda. Because, again, you know, our thing was, you know, it's cute if they take a knee. We don't really care. It's not that serious if they take a knee. What we really need them to do is pay the fee. You know?
Y'all need to stop.
It's okay to hug and hold hands, but we just need to free the land. That was our call also.
Great. You know, I we have a great relationship, the Brother Khalid and the African Independent Party. We talk all the time. We met together and with Amala Yeshitela. But, you know, I was telling him the strategy that it's a twofold strategy. We got to do the Independent Black Radical Party. We tried it with the Freedom Party and the Unity Party. But another strategy, which we found extremely successful, is the Democratic Party primary. 95% of the people in my district are Democrats. Whoever wins that primary is a shoo-in for the general. So what we've done is say we're going to run in the primary. The Democratic Party hates us because they know we are no part of them. We don't go to their meetings. They don't do no fundraisers for us, nothing. We just registered for the primary, and we beat them at their own game. So now they're angry because their hand-picked puppets we beat. So if we could focus on some local seats, like in my district at one time, to win an assembly seat, there were 50,000 registered Democrats in my district. 90% of them were black and brown. And only 7,000 of them came out to vote. So for you to win that, you just have to get 4,000 votes. Go to the Black Association president, the tenant association president in the project, go to the local clergy member, go to the community board meeting, knock on doors, door to door wins the war, and you could beat them at their own game from those local seats of power.
Wow.
Wow.
Brother Tommy.
Yes. Look, I'm just eating. I'm receiving. And I learned so much in this conversation. I'd just like to thank you, Brother Elliot and Brother Rich, for hosting this conversation. It was an honor for me to participate with the Honorable Charles Barron, Comrade Charles Barron, setting an example for how we should move. And also with Brother Marcus and the great work of Brother Joaquin. And Brother Elliot, I receive what you are saying, what you are pointing to. I'm committed, and my comrades are, and our movement, we are committed to working to implement a unified strategy in Philly. I'm willing in the future to, if I have to take up the mantle of the revolutionary electoral struggle on the basis of the revolutionary changes that we made on the ground. And I just like to just thank
you comrades for the work that you're doing. I'm proud as a black man. I'm proud as an African. And I want us to stay in touch, and I want us to be in a united front, in an organization with each other. In fact, as the Honorable Charles Barron said, Comrade said, we need to do this again and again and again. We need to make this national. I would love to be part of this. I love to be part of an organization with you, comrades, that will fight for black power, that will spread this gospel of unified revolutionary struggle. I'm really, really, really on fire. I really appreciate everything that I said tonight. And unfortunately, I got to run to this next meeting, but please, may God continue to bless you, comrades, and the ancestors be with you. We going to win. We going to free the land. I'm your brother here. Call upon me anytime. I'm looking forward to the next move that we going to make.
Straight ahead.
Thank you, sir.
All right, brothers. I got to go. I love y'all.
Talk to you soon.
All right, peace.
If the rest of you brothers can stay with us for about 10 more minutes, I just want to, because we got a caller that's been sitting and waiting, and I want to get him on. You got a few more minutes, brothers?
Yes, sir.
Good. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation for the time we have left. You can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Time for An Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Let me just say this before our time winds up. And that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip, and you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are, and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back. The time for an awakening is 9 o'clock here in the city of Philadelphia. Building an economic base in our community. We're in conversation this evening with three community builders and one activist, political representative, activist, and organizer, 60th District of New York, Assemblyman Charles Byrne was with us. Joaquin Garrett, community builder and chief architect of Africa Town, Seattle. Tommy Joshua, community builder and architect of Peace Park, Philadelphia. Also, Brother Marcus Jackson, community builder of Urban Equity Alliance, LLC. We lost Brother Tommy because he had another meeting to go to. But for the time left, you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Let's go to a caller we've been waiting for a while. Let's go to New York City. 646.
Hey, what's happening, Elliot Richard, and to your guests? Hey, Charles, let me ask you a quick question. What is the deal with your boy Hakeem Jeffries coming after you? I would really like to understand, why is he effing with you, of all people, with all of the work that you do in New York and all of the sellouts that are his cohorts and buddies in you know, his sugar honey iced tea. I really got an issue with this.
Well, Hakeem Jeffries is a part of the Democratic Party establishment. He's a puppet for Nancy Pelosi, who is a corporate Democrat, and they create the Hakeem Jeffries, they create the Cory Bookers, and they create the Barack Obamas in order to keep the plantation kind of quiet. So Hakeem got into his position
when he ran against me and the entire establishment, all of the elected officials, all the unions, all the newspapers, everybody, it was the most unheard of alignment of power for a single congressional seat, because they wanted to really stop me rather than to start him. But once they got him in, he beat out, you know, Sister Barbara Lee. Barbara Lee was supposed to be in that third, fourth, fifth highest position. She was there for 23 years. He just got there. She was getting the votes, and Nancy Pelosi was afraid of Barbara Lee. Barbara Lee's more independent and progressive, so they created Hakeem Jeffries. So he turned out to be a big loser in this last election, so he's scared. He's panicking. He lost in his own assembly district, 3 seats. He lost with Elliot Ingalls. He lost with a whole lot of folks. So now he's frightened that DSA, the Democratic Social Murder, is coming after him. And he's been trying to get a stronghold in our district because we wiped out the Democratic Club. And so he's been supporting candidates after us for years. And we've been beating them badly. So now he's desperate, and he's putting hundreds of thousands of dollars behind the candidates now because he's desperate, he's panicking, and he's frightened that he might lose his position if DSA convinces us and others to go against him, or if I run against him again, and then they have some division, and he learns. So he's panicking for his seat. He's desperate right now, and he has no consciousness whatsoever, no history in our movement. He comes from a white law firm on Wall Street, and even though he's related to Leonard Jeffries, the consciousness is not there at all.
Mm. Well, you know, Charles, you know, Elliot and Richard, you got a brother where I first heard about it, that maybe one day you should get on your show, Howard Jordan, because Howard was one who told me about it. And, you know, when we talk about Latino and Black coalition, Howard is the real deal when it comes down to that. You know what I mean? He's the type of brother that understands clearly he's an African, what his roots are, and he respects our people. He supports our people. And when he had his radio show, Charles was always on there. So, when I had read it on his page, I became, you know, quite concerned about it. But, you know, a beautiful thing how the ancestors work. They got you on here today. But the thing is with Jeffries, you know, they talking about he's supposed to be the third person in line and all that. I don't care about that. You know, like you said, he's a puppet and he's basically a disgrace. So the thing is, how do we get our people to see people like Jeffries, the Clyburns, and the rest of them for who and what they really are? Because if you notice, you know, we got this devil Biden in office, and now he's, in a sense, reneging on all of the things that he said he was going to do for the Negro. And as always, the Negro just goes along and says, yes, abort. Nobody addresses these matters, and when someone like yourself do, they want to now come and attack you. But listen, I'm just going to say this to you, Brother Charles. If you got to put your foot in Jeffries behind, put your foot in his behind, because he's a dangerous Negro. And, you know, he's not going to do anything whatsoever to help you in regards to how you moving forward and what you're trying to do. So I support you, and I want you to put your foot in his behind. And let's just deal with it for what it is.
Well, you know what? First of all, I want to thank you so much for the support. But we whip him every time with his candidates, and we're going to do that again. What you got to really, really be careful of, if giving attention to somebody who's irrelevant when it comes to what's going to happen in the district. Yes, you raise the contradictions, but the best thing we can do is to run independent candidates and win these local seats, because they don't care what you say about them. The only thing they care is if you could beat them. So the more local seats we win, the more endangered his position is. But getting into, as Judge Bruce Wright said, a pee-pee contest with a skunk,
you both come out stinking.
Well, you know, I'll leave you on this note, Charles. Sometimes, and this has been a problem in our community, I'm sorry to say, we don't get into the necessary pee-pee contests with skunks. And we allow them to get away with things that they do. And the bottom line is, he got to be dealt with. And if you're not going to deal with him, then he's just going to continuously come after you.
No, we deal with him all the time. The way we deal with him, by beating his candidates that he supports.
Okay.
And I've always verbally beat him up.
Know.
Listen, I've already been attacking Jeffries on my Facebook and all of that. And not because of his supporting somebody against me, but because of who he is. So we always attack Tish James, Hakeem Jeffries. People beat me up for attacking Barack Obama. So I've always done that. And I will continue to do that. Yeah, we'll call him out. But I'm saying to you, calling him out is not as powerful as taking him out and winning local seats of power to set the foundation to beat the Hakeem Jeffries of this world.
Well, brother, I support you. And, you know, I try to make my little small donations. And any candidate that you put out against Jeffries and his crew, I'm definitely going to support, because, you know, the brother really got to go, because it's no reason for that man who supposedly have lineage in the struggle to be a bootlicker. And take care of yourself and be safe. And listen, people, let me tell you, his wife is just as strong as Brother Charles is. And, you know, they're doing good things for that community that they're in, because like you said, Brother Charles, you know, your community is the only one that hasn't been gentrified, but the only thing, and we got to talk about this one day, is the only thing that's saving Harlem is the project. If it wasn't for the project, we would be all out of business, because
it's
the project that's keeping these white folks out. And you know that they're trying to do everything in their power to tear the project down, sell them, and all that stuff. But I want to thank you, brother, because believe me, you're doing something that no other politician in our community has done, and I'm saying this, since Adam Clayton Powell. And you know, in my community, we had the no good Charlie Rangel. You know what I mean? And let me tell you something. I knew Charlie Rangel ever since I was a little boy. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And he's a disgrace, because he didn't do one thing that I see that you're trying to do. He didn't leave nobody in place to replace him. And now you got a damn Dominican in his spot. So that tells you it all. And have a good day, my brother.
Good day. Thank you, man.
Thank you for your contribution. Brother Barron, Brother Y King, and Brother Marcus, myself and Brother Richard, we want to do this again, even if we got to do it every quarter, to bring you men on to talk about the challenges, the successes, the strategy that we want to discuss over the air of how we can move forward. I know that I'm going to make sure that Brother Y King gets Brother Marcus's and also Brother Tommy's contact. One of the reasons, because Brother Y King, you had mentioned to me that it's been other black communities around the country and other states that have contacted you about the model that you have used for Africatown, and they want to adopt that same model. Tell us a little bit about that, Brother Y King, before we kind of wind things down.
Right. I would say some of the things that we have been successful with, yes, we have been reached out. One, by the original Africatown. I don't know if people know the history, but the original Africatown was established in Mobile, Alabama, by Africans who were kidnapped from Benin and brought by that was known as the last ship of enslaved Africans to be brought in. They were brought in after important Black peoples as captives to be slaves was made illegal. But so that's one community we are in communication with. They've come here, I've been there, and supporting St. Louis is working on a model of Africa Town, and there's others working on a Black Wall Street model there too. Been into Carolinas, North Carolina area. That's kind of how it's progressing. I would like to lift up that we have our 8th annual State of Africa Town. So every year we have a, you know, report out to our community that what set out to do the year before. So it's like a State of the Union, State of the City, but it's our State of Africa Town, what we accomplished based on what we said we were going to do, what our challenges were, and what we're seeking to do in the next year. So the people, if they go to Africa Town Seattle on Facebook or Instagram, they can follow that. It's going to be February 20th. I invite everyone to tap in. We're going to have one person I know, at least Brother Baron would know, is Sister Erica Ford. She's going to be one of our feature speakers around our peace and safety strategy, sharing some of her successes. So our model is around sourcing brilliance from Black people everywhere, regardless of time or geography, as the model for how we build our communities into the future. Mm-hmm. So that's coming up. And this year, the communities out of New York, the Land Trust Coalition there, have reached out to us. So we had some calls with them at a time. So I think it's moving, and there's other things there's a sister who is in Pittsburgh, Sister Marimba. I don't want to mess up her last name, but she's over the Hill District CDC, and they're also striving to, you know, revitalize their Black community there. So there's people working. I think our main thing is that we have to connect the dots, right? You know, so we're not all starting over and bumping our heads in the same places, right? So if I learn a lesson, let's pass it so no one else has to learn a lesson. One of the things that we lack is institutions that keep our collective knowledge. So you look at universities and research institutions, they basically aggregate all of these case studies, which allows the economy, technology, et cetera, to move forward as each generation of students comes through and strives to solve the problems and move it forward. For us, only when we have access right now to our living libraries, like Brother Elder Baron and others, are we able to access that knowledge, but we don't have a systematic way of sharing that right now. So I think that's something important that we can do, is archive our solutions, archive the lessons from our struggles, even our losses, so that the next generation can pick up the baton and move it forward.
You know, if you want to, Brother Y. King, State of Africa Town address, we'll air that, and if we can do it on Time for Awakening. If you choose to, we'll be able to do that for you, and it'll go, you know, it'll go worldwide.
Sure, brother. We definitely take that offer up. So I'll follow up with you on that.
Good, good. Before we wind things up, Brother Marcus, any final words?
That definitely love this conversation, being able to have the opportunity to contribute. Definitely learning from everyone, their experiences, and just really feeling the ancestors here on this call today and in this discussion, giving us that energy to push forward. And as a follow-up, I'm looking forward to an opportunity where we can really, even more so, focus on the economics of how we get to fund these projects and such. You know, I really see the need for a equity fund that our people can implement in sharing in these, our experiences and sharing in our development. There's a good idea that could come to the table that our people across the nation, you know, have opportunity to look for investment opportunities. Tell them what they need to invest and what they can look forward to as far as the return on that investment. You know, there are challenges with getting money out of these banks, you know, redlining is still in effect to this day. So we continue to have even non-traditional ways of raising money for our communities will be most beneficial for us. So,
okay, Richard, bring it on home for us, man.
Hey, brother, I'll jump in real quick and just respond to that real quick.
Oh, certainly.
All right. So that was a great point that Brother Marcus raised. And one thing I want to say is that the Biden-Harris administration in their, you know, campaigning laid out an equity plan, a Lift Every Voice plan, which is, I guess, supposed to be for the Black community, and a Build Back Better plan. Included in those plans is supposed to be more resources for community land trusts, CDFIs, community development financial institutions. So I think it's important to track that money from the federal level through your, you know, local elected to make sure it gets into the hands of organizations that are, you know, responsive to the community, because what happens is it ends up going to the organizations that perpetuate the status quo. So I would just lift that up. If they're saying it's there and it's supposed to be for us, we need to make sure that bag gets all the way from the top down to the block where it's supposed to make an impact.
And if I could just add that, please, I really would appreciate a recording of this program. It's been awesome. And I would appreciate sharing the contacts of all the people on the program. And I'd like to stay in contact. And certainly I'm going to tune in to the Africatown Seattle piece. And if we could just stay in contact, I'd really would appreciate that. And then you can check out some of the stuff that we were able to do on Charles Barron Legacy and Charles Barron Radical Politics. These are 8-minute, 10-minute videos on YouTube. Charles Barron Legacy and Charles Barron Radical Politics.
Brother Barron, if you're going to tune in, we'd love to have you say a couple of words.
Look, I'm so inspired by you, my brother. I'll be an observer or a participant or whatever you want me to do. I am fine. I'm fine talking and I'm fine listening and learning. I am so pleased to hear what you're doing.
You know,
Brother Barron, I'll make sure that you get all those contacts of everybody that was on. Go ahead, Richard. I'm sorry.
And y'all don't know, I'm really excited about this. What we have shared, and I think that this is a beginning. For me, I don't hear it at this level, these type of developments. I mean, when the Brookings does their thing and all these other tanks do their things in relationship to Black economic development, and it's difficult to hear what these Negroes in the city, what they talking about, if they talking about anything. But identifying people who are truly doing political, and again, Baba Barron, about political economic development at whatever stage, for us to be able to come together, I think in identifying, being able to cross-fertilize, and be able to go back to the 19th century where we have conventions where these kind of exchanges are institutionalized. As you said, Brother Joaquin, you know, because if we don't do that, then we cannot be able to develop our communities in the manner. I mean, because as they making this fourth industrial transition, you know, we're not even included in that. And I think it's so just and powerful in what we're doing. So I'm really pleased. I'm really excited. And y'all really, as it was said earlier, really lift my spirits, because this is something that is a do or die kind of situation for people. Yeah, we'll be alive, but we'll be on, you know, respirators and, you know, be plugged into something, but we won't be a active, dynamic, creative and innovative people as we've always been. And this shows what you're doing is just that. And I'm really appreciative.
Brothers, we're going to wind things down, so I'll be in conversation with you soon. And send me Ben Barron. I'll make sure that you get all those contacts.
All right. Appreciate it, man. Straight ahead.
Talk to you soon. Peace.
Take care now.
Be alive. Richard.
Yes, sir.
Come to an end of another program, man. I was just happy to have all the brothers on sharing what's going on in their areas. And the movement that's happening, you know, it's something that Tommy said when he was on about the fear. You know, he meets with folks here and he said about the fear
mm-hmm.
That some of our people have. and it's still there. The apprehension, the not having confidence that we can do this. You hear it. It comes out in some of our talks and speeches and, you know, in conversations that we had with one another. But the faith that we should have in our brother, the confidence we can have of men that are doing it. If I'm a little shaky, then lean on your brothers. Mm-hmm. If I'm not confident, then have confidence in the men that are out there doing it. Help them as much as you can. If you go to Peace Park has a website. Africatown has a website to show their work. And I'll be proud to air the State of the Africatown address on Time for Awakening so people can hear it. These things can be done in your city. And it just takes a community to be organized. You don't need your elected official to do it. You don't need your alderman to do it, your city councilman, unless you got one that's like Brother Charles Byron. You don't need these people to do it. You can do it. You can force the issue. You can take direct action to get these things started in your community. And then you got help. You got other people around the country that's doing what you're doing, and you can network and build strong communities together. So, you know, I just want to make mention of that, Richard, before we wind things down.
Yes, that's important. Definitely important.
Before we end the program this evening, I want to give the lineup on Time for an Awakening Media, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Oshi. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Always interesting conversation and guests on African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Later on Monday evenings from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And from 8 to 9 on Monday evenings, Black Therapy Central with host Dr. Maria Combine. And from 9 to 10, from 9 to 10, later on Monday evenings, they'll be starting up very soon, Conversation Reparations, that's in Cobra's program. That's the first and third Monday of every month on Tuesday. Tuesday evening, 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And on Friday, Time for an Awakening is back from 8 until on Saturday afternoons from 4 to 6, Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And later on Saturday evening from 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa with host Alfonso Watkins. And then Time for an Awakening is back on Sunday evenings from 7 until. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world.
to play such a small part of.
Save the children.